Welcome here to WFTI on Teaching Elementary Math. This morning, I'd like to begin by just doing some math review with you, similar to what you might start a math class with. Let's just start with the board up here. We're going to use the number line for a bit. And if you would, just all together, with good volume, let's count by fives to start with, shall we?
5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50.
Thank you. Now let's count by 10.
10, 20, 30, 40, 50.
Good. Thank you. One thing I noticed was that most of you were participating. And when I went like this, most of you knew what that meant and cooperated with it. That's excellent. One thing that I might just say here, it was interesting to me when you told me before class what grade you will be teaching. For most of you, it was grades. And if you've got experience, you probably already know this, but don't be afraid to have your first and second graders do loudly exactly what we just did, even if you have other students in the classroom. If you have third and fourth and fifth graders in the classroom, that's okay. They will get to the place where they can tune you out. Have them say it aloud. Let's look at some other problems on the board here. Let's do the sixes this morning. And let's start quietly with 0 plus 6. And as we get over here, let's be speaking loudly. Not shouting, but let's be speaking loudly. And just get louder as we do the sixes this morning. Ready?
0 plus 6 equals 6. 1 plus 5 equals 5. 2 plus 4 equals 6. 3 plus 3 equals 6. 4 plus 2 equals 6. 5 plus 1 equals 6. 6 plus 0 equals 6.
Good. Now, let's see. James and Rebecca, would you please just come up? And at the board here, write the number that comes before this number and the number that comes after. Rebecca, if you would do the column over here. James, if you would do the column here. The number before and the number after. Thank you. You may go to your seats. I purposely did something that we as teachers tend to do as I set up those problems. Do you see what it was? I'm sorry? Exactly. I put some of those to where it was uncomfortable for them to do it. James had to get down. As teachers, we tend to put them a little too high for the students sometimes. Just be aware of simple things like that. The other thing that I was doing this morning was making my twos like this. And my wife came behind me and she was doing this. You as a teacher have a responsibility to be careful with how you make your numbers and how you write your words. Just be especially careful about that. All right, that's just a sample of how you might start a class. That's a composite of a number of different lessons that I got out of the teacher's books here. As I was preparing for this class, I asked lots of different teachers. What are some things to remember when teaching elementary math? And one of my favorites was someone who has studied education for many, many years. And he looked at me and he said, "You tell them, don't be intimidated by the mind-numbing repetition in lower grade math." We need that drill to get it firmly fixed in their minds. Teachers, I told you that I'm not used to teaching first, second, and third grade. But I have a passion for teaching first, second, and third graders math, because if you don't do it well, then I have to do it when they get to my class. And I don't think I'm lazy by nature, but I don't like to do your job and mine both. So if you can get those basic facts fixed in their minds before they get to fourth and fifth grade, you're doing them and your co-teachers a big favor. Let's look at some of the pitfalls that we do. We're not going to spend a lot of time focusing on what we do wrong. We want to get to where we focus on what we do right. But on number one, the teacher gets tired of so much drill and oral review. When I was talking to Jonah Avini about this, he said, "We think that the students are tired of the flashcards, but usually it's the teacher that's tired of the flashcards." So don't get tired of that drill and oral review. And something else that I encourage you is to really pay attention to your teacher's manuals. Because it seemed like no matter what manual I looked at as I was studying for this, they would introduce something that you're going to drill on the board or in class before they actually see it on paper in their books. And so if you're just looking at the lesson and, okay, I need to teach them how to do this, then you'll get to a lesson where they're supposed to do something that they haven't really been taught to do yet. So pay attention to that. Look at number two. One of the pitfalls is that students are not engaged in class. They're not participating. So you're doing oral review like I told you to do. But you've got a student back there who's looking out the window while the rest of us are following along, learning how to count by fives. Make sure that all the students are participating. But one of the things that raising your voice as you recite does is it kind of draws in some of those students, especially the ones who were kind of afraid to be heard in the first place. Number three, low standards of order and neatness. If you go to novice class, some of that class on procedures that Brother Conrad has, I'm sure he'll be talking about that. But have a plan for how the page is set up. Be consistent with requiring neatness and order in how they set up their math problems. Another pitfall is to label the student and lower your standards. Now, students do have difficulties. But so many times, well, he's this thing or that name or this brand or that brand. And so we kind of tend to lower our standards and our expectations. Don't necessarily do that. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. Number five, one pitfall is to check papers without learning anything. You know, teachers spend a tremendous amount of time checking papers. I think one reason we especially enjoy checking math papers is it's so clear. As a beginning teacher, checking math was one thing that I could understand. I could look at this, and I could look at this, and if it wasn't the same, I could make an X here. I get it. There were so many things about teaching that I didn't understand. But checking papers was something I did understand. And then I put a score in my book, and I was finished. But, well, here's an example of something that happened to me last year, and I'm embarrassed to say, I wish I could say it happened my first year of teaching. But it happened to me just last year. I do speed drills consistently. We use a math curriculum that has a speed drill almost every day. And I was doing speed drills. But I tell teachers, oh, don't get too encumbered with just checking, 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 checking. And so I didn't check the speed drills every day. And occasionally I did. But one of the girls in my class really, it just seemed like we kept getting certain math problems wrong. And it wasn't until Mr. Murray slowed down and looked at it until I figured out that 9 times 6 isn't 56. You know how electronics sometimes have kind of a default mode? When that girl thought about it, she could write the right answer. But her default answer for 9 times 6 was 56. And so many, many math problems were wrong because Mr. Miller was, I was checking the problems wrong and I was giving a score, which is a teacher's job to do, but I wasn't figuring out why these problems are wrong. Even when she checked them and corrected them, like I said, she could get the right answer if she really stopped and thought about it, but the default mode was wrong. And so, when you check, think about why the student is getting these problems wrong. You don't have to do it on every problem, but if there's a consistent problem, figure out what the problem is. Don't be too obsessed with just checking. It's like a farmer who's so concerned about bookwork and getting the records right, he forgot to plant his corn. You know, you need to be preparing for classes and teaching. Don't become too obsessed with checking. Number 5, moving on without mastery. You've made your schedule. That's one thing that you need to do, is figure out how much you need to get done in math every day. And there's most of the students get it, but one or two don't. But we have to stay on schedule, so we keep pushing on through. And then they get to Mr. Miller's class in fourth grade, and they still don't know some basic facts. But at least we got all 180 lessons done. Get advice on what to do about that. For us, it made a big difference when the teacher sent flashcards home on the things that our student needed practice on so that he could stay with the rest of the class. That's just one idea. Another idea is to maybe shorten another class in the afternoon and circle back and hammer that math fact again. But to just press on without mastery, I think, is one of the problems that we have in our schools, and we're producing students who haven't mastered their fact. Let me just give an example of one way that I moved on without mastery. Here's how. Let's do this. 7 + 3 = 10. Back in second grade, I taught myself this neat method that I invented all by myself. 7, 8, 9, 10. And still today, sometimes when I'm adding a column of numbers, I go 7, 8, 9, 10. That's my default mode. We want to get to where we're past that, to where we've mastered this. Let's go to the solutions. Stop focusing on things we do wrong. Brother Jonah reminds me there's four ways to learn things: by reading, by hearing, by seeing, by doing. I told a class a while back that my sixth grade teacher helped me build a greenhouse last summer. And I said she'd be 102 years old by now. And he said, how can that be? And I said, she taught me how to follow directions. That's how she helped me. Because that greenhouse had a bajillion pieces, and I was trying to figure out, and if you didn't follow it step by step in the right order, you were in trouble down the road. And so, teach your students how to follow directions and do your work. That, I think, should be our goal. You love to teach, and that's good. But by the time you have students, those of you who are teaching 4th, 5th grade math, they shouldn't have to wait for you every day to begin their lesson. Brother Jonathan Erb says that once they got to the upper grades, he would ask them to go ahead and begin while he's with another class. And the upside of that was all the problems that they got done before they got to his class, before he got to their class, he would go look over their shoulder and check them with the answer key. And if there was one wrong, he would point it out to him, and they could go back and correct it, and he wouldn't count it wrong. Just kind of a little incentive to get started, figure it out, and go for it. So by reading, That's kind of our goal. Read and proceed. By hearing, and that's when you as a teacher do what I'm doing right now, just talk. You're explaining things. Remember that we use the known to explain the unknown. Okay? You've already taught what a half of something is. Okay? So now you're going to say, remember what this is. This is a half, and then you cut it again. Now let's talk about what this is. You're using the known to explain the unknown. That's seeing. I mean, that's hearing. And then by seeing, that's when we use things like this. You can see it. I have a little balance scale here. You can see it. And then that also goes with letter D, by doing it. Well, one teacher told me, all schools somewhere nearby have gravel. Bring some gravel in, have them put it on their desk, and put it in groups of five and count by fives, or subtract three from this group. By doing. Now, understand that you're not going to go through life with a pocket full of gravel. We're going to have to graduate from that. But right now, there's a time for using that, by doing it. Number two on solution says review. A lot of what you're doing, if you think that in first grade you can tell them 1 + 3 = 4, then you're done. Well, you're not. We have to keep. And so we review. And here, there's a lot of different ways that we can review. I just wrote down some ideas. Review with songs, games, hand motions, pictures, flashcards, oral drill with a pointer like we did a minute ago. Can review with worksheets, wall charts. I talked to one experienced teacher, and they said, you know, after they have studied a certain number group, let's say you've got 5, 6, 11. 11 minus 6 is 5, that number group. You've got it on the wall. He said he leaves it up there, and if a student isn't sure, he'd rather they'd look up there and check themselves before they write a wrong answer down. Eventually, you're going to have to take them down because you won't have room on your walls for all of that. But that's an idea. Use wall charts. In this review, I want to caution us a little bit. If you would go around here today and get ideas from every other first and second grade teachers on how to teach math, and you'd learn some new way to drill, you might think, I could have a very interesting math class. And it might be, but I have to think of one of my own sons. If his teacher would have tried every method in the books, it would not have worked. But she was very consistent. And he knew what to expect. And they drilled and drilled and drilled. He told me, he heard me talking about it as we were driving up here, and he said, oh, Dad, we did tons of that. And they did. But he learned it. I can't wait to have him in fourth grade. Because he knows his math. Now, there's a temptation to go online and get even more good ideas. I'd encourage you to basically stick with the way that it's presented in your teacher's manual. Here's just an example. I brought this along. My family and I sell books at homeschool conventions. And at one of the booths near us, during a time when it was fairly quiet, they were selling these things. And my boys went over there, and they were playing with it. It's fascinating them. Look at that. So you hang a weight on the 10, and then whatever two numbers balance that means if you add those two numbers together, it equals 10. And so my boys were playing with this, and pretty soon a group of people, you know, gathered around. It was kind of a good sales pitch for these things. And so the lady ended up giving one to my sons. I say that in self-defense. I didn't buy it. That was interesting for my boys for 30 minutes because they were cooped up in a building and had nothing else to do. And so I think, I should buy one like this for my school children. That would help them to learn their numbers. It's a gimmick. I'm sorry, but I'm not. You could fill your classroom with things like this. And you could try those methods where my 3-year-old learned how to do long division in 3 simple steps and whatever. Just stick with your math book. Now, let's continue here. Look at number 3. It says, establish procedures for page setup and spacing and even correcting flashcards and speed drills. Let's just go through that briefly here. I notice a number of you have students in the older grades, and if they've been taught, if there are this many problems on this line in the math book, then put this many problems on the line in your paper, if they're copying the problems. Then I can put that paper and my answer key side by side, and everything is like straight across. If they put all this plus these two down here with the next one, it becomes a jumble. The other thing that makes scoring so much easier is if they're doing it in workbooks, have them hand in their workbook open to that page. And then you can put 3 or 4 workbooks side by side and score them all at one time. You've figured that out already. I don't need to tell you that. For flashcards, a lot of teachers will do flashcards after the math lesson is complete. In my classroom, we can hear as the lower grades finish their math lessons, they're starting to say flashcards, and my son especially, his voice gets a little louder when he's really trying to spout out math facts as fast as he can. I'm going to just do a little flashcard, but we're going to do more like a flashcard race, and I'm going to choose the sisters here because, just because.
All right, are you ready? 3, 10, 10, 6, 4, 10, 5, 11, 11, 9, 2, 11, 11, 8, 3, 11, 11, 7, 4, 11, 11, 7, 12, 12, 9, 3 more.
No, I don't generally. In fact, here's just a little example. Here we see grade one for Tuesday. And right here are the flashcards that they're going to do on Tuesday. They may do the same ones again Wednesday, but then here's a card that says grade one Wednesday. I was mean to you. I just pulled a stack out of there. Right for it. I'm glad that you mentioned stage fright. I don't know about you, but I don't expect... let me put it this way. I expect all of you who weren't sitting in these two seats are kind of glad you weren't. Remember that. Your students might have a bit of stage fright. Or a brain freeze. If I was going to ask Carla to purposely be really slow, and I forgot to do it before class, but in class, you'll naturally have those who are quite a bit slower, and especially you put a little pressure on. Be conscious of that. That's one reason I like doing flashcards individually. Some students, you won't want to always use the timer on. They'll just do better without having that little thing putting pressure on them, and it's going to beep pretty soon, and I can't even think what the next number is because I know it's going to beep pretty soon. Having said that, don't necessarily... completely try to remove all the learning obstacles from your little first grade boy. Now, let me just use a personal example. God made me a little different from the other first graders in my class, too. I didn't have dyslexia. I didn't have... well, maybe I shouldn't say I didn't. But anyway, I was naughty. But I was also small. I was a preemie, 2 pounds. And I never did catch up with all the rest of you. But in grade school, it was worse. There were people in my class a full foot taller than I was. In math, I could kind of keep up with them. But when it was time to choose teams for soccer and softball, I know what it feels like to be the last one chosen day after day after day. Okay, Now, I could stand up here with tears in my eyes and say that. Because I've been scarred and it wasn't fair and my teacher should have done something different. But you know what? Life's not going to be fair. So yeah, it's okay to make so that they don't have to deal with the pressure of a timer every time. But don't just throw the timer out the window for them. Especially if the rest of the class is doing it. I managed to survive without too many scars being chosen last. And so I just want to encourage us, if you need to label someone, well, okay, but don't completely change what you're doing. Let them in on some of those things. There'll be other places where they excel. Look at number 4. Read the teacher's manual. That seems like a no-brainer. But sometimes, even after you've been teaching for a while, if you go back and read some of those first pages that you read before you started teaching, they'll make a lot more sense. So go circle back and read that again. For me, it was interesting for me to read through the lower grade teacher's manuals as I prepared for this. How many of you know what triplets are? In math class. Okay, most of you do. I think I had heard the term, but I kind of forgot what they call it. Triplets are like 11, 5, 6. It's that family. So any time you see a 5 and a 6, you know there's an 11 in there somewhere. Just read your manuals, follow them. Number 5, drill, drill, drill. And you say, I don't have time to listen to flashcards because 4th grade needs me. And you probably don't. And I'm encouraging you to get help. In our school, it's okay for the school board for upper grade students to go help lower grade students if it's listening to flashcards or reading. Be careful about doing a lot of that without getting permission for it. But that's an excellent opportunity. You don't have to do everything by yourself. I mentioned sending flashcards home to the parents. That's totally okay. I don't know that I do it every night, but I think it's good to do it. And then follow through, make sure it's actually happening, because I'm a parent also and I know how it can go at home. So get help if you need to. Upper graders, mothers, it's out there. Number 6, be disciplined and require a disciplined mind. You as a teacher, I already mentioned just simple things like trying to write neatly and keeping your board in order, keeping your desk in order, keeping their pages in order, and then require them to focus during math class. Now, one of the things that I caution, watch your students. I've got a second grader. If you try to have a 15-minute class just drilling and drilling and drilling, you're going to lose him. And it's partly his fault, but it's also partly your fault. To be cautious about how long your classes are. Be disciplined, require a disciplined mind. One of the things, and this is just another quote, it says, math is difficult and not enjoyable if you don't know the facts. If these things don't come automatically for you, when you get to division and multiplication and you're combining several different processes in the same problem, they dread math class. Math is difficult and not enjoyable if you don't know the facts. Something that we like to do is before lunch, I like to say a series of math facts, and then whoever says the answer first gets to go, or maybe they're all trying to get the answer and write it on a piece of paper, and the group that gets the answer correct gets to go first or whatever. So let me just give you a simple one. 3 times 8 divided by 6 times 10 plus 2, go ahead. Good. I have students who just thrive on that challenge. There again, adapt that to whatever grade level you're working with. Teachers, what are some other, maybe you have other pitfalls, other solutions, other things, ways to drill? Help us out. Let's make it more specific. What's a pitfall? What's something either you or a student has trouble doing correctly?
What about students doing long division and so their divisor might be 42, and instead of estimating it, they go and write a problem out 42 times 6 and figure out what that might be. Is that something that should absolutely be disallowed?
Okay. Instead of estimating on long division, they try several different numbers just randomly.
I just said the next time I made it 3.
Right, right. You were going to say something, David.
I have a student that I think he thought it was going to be a shortcut, but he would constantly go 42 times 2, 42 times 3.
Yes.
2 times 4. He made the whole series. So any 42 times anything, he knew the answer for, because he had it all written out over on the side.
It's a method that seems like soon they would see, you know, I could make it easier for myself if I did it the right way. Exactly. One thing, when they get into division, if you use graph paper, it can really help to keep columns straight, put a number in each box. What else?
One thing that I've challenged with that is just drilling the steps over and over. I actually wrote it on a sticky note, and that student kept the sticky note with their problem, so they knew what step comes next in the division.
I appreciate that. And there are so many other math applications where steps are important. So put those on the wall, on sticky notes. Good reminder.
So when I write on this, my scratch pad, and yes, they get to see it, and I get a little alarmed sometimes. How much do you worry about that? Like, if it's okay for them to write a little bit fast, and I feel crunched on time, how?
Good question.
I guess you need to get really good at writing neatly and fast.
You need to get it. I have been alarmed coming back in from break time and looking at the board and thought, I wrote that? Okay, others of you, especially those of you who are in first, second, and third grade, tell me some things that you do that help those younger students. Yeah.
like the flashcards and facts, we might have like the 1 through 10 plus and minus, 1 through 10 minus and another. Then 11 to 18 triplets and one.
Okay.
The plus and the minus. So mm-hmm. I have four different stacks. Or for third grade, when they get into multiplication, I separate each family. And then I have a chart. Every day we do the flashcards that they've had up to that point, and I record their score. Then I have a limit for them. Once they can hit that, they may skip that stack the next day. And then, okay. So they get to skip that stack the next day. The next day they do it again. When they master that in the amount of time, mm-hmm. they can skip 2 days. So by the end of the year, they'll have some stacks that they're skipping up to about 15 days. So that way, the ones who need more practice get more practice, and those who don't need as much practice still get some practice, but yeah, you don't skip them all together.
That's an excellent idea. So arrange your flashcards by groups, and then once they've come to a certain degree of mastery, let them skip a day, and then if they can continue that, skip more days. I like that.
I'm a huge fan of Flashmaster. They're very expensive, but I just got 4 or 5 of them, and it's amazing. You can start them out with them all in order, and then when they get familiar with that, it scrambles them up until you have like 3 or 4 families in your test. There's all different settings on there, and then you can record their grade. They can be doing it quietly at their desk, and they can whisper the numbers if they need to, and that really, really helps. And those little earphones that you make out of tube pipes.
Oh, right, right.
And then you can whisper it to yourself, and you can hear yourself very clearly, but very few other people can. That really, really helps.
Thank you. Flashmaster.
And when I generate S-list says not to do presented charts because that's level 2 thinking, but I love doing sticker charts, and then when you get 40 stickers or so, give up the prize.
Okay. A little motivation there. Thank you. And you understand what she was talking about, the little pipes. Ours are just made of PVC with elbows.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. Okay. All right, what else?
I like to tell lots of stories, just like your pen up there, or just make lots of pictures and stories to go with concepts. You can still remember the decimal point, but still proud of himself. He gets really mad if you forget him. things like that. The word's very improper for a large number to sit on top of a small one.
A decimal point that gets mad if you forget him. A large number sitting on top of a small number in improper fractions. Appreciate that. All right, let's just do it. A few more things with second grade. This is more like what you would see in second grade. Notice the pictures up there that she just mentioned here. Multiple can, multiplier, product. Just a visual to help us remember the labels. Let's see. Becca. And I already picked up. Mariana, could you help me a little bit, please? If you would just go up to the thousands, hundreds, tens, ones chart, please. And write the numbers that I say to you. Let's say in the ones place, write a 3. And in the tens place, a 4. Not good. And in the hundreds place a 7, and in the thousands a 1. Okay, now can you tell us how to say that number?
1,743.
Good, you may be seated. And then I would allow the next student to go up and do something similar. In story problems, I'm talking about this simple picture right here. And I would say this is your church, let's say. There are six benches on each side. Okay? If Kendall and Roy dusted all the benches, how many benches did they dust? Okay, someone just tell me. 12. Okay. Now, since this is a story problem, we would write six benches plus six benches equals 12 benches. Okay, keep that number in mind. Here's a challenge for you. If one boy dusted five benches, how many benches did the other boy dust? Okay, someone in the back row.
Seven.
Seven. Okay. There's a teacher. And I like what Violet said here. You have to say seven benches. And the reason I like that is because I teach upper grades. And when they come from a teacher who was a stickler about labeling and decimal points and commas, when they get to my class, they label it and put their decimal points in and make their fours proper. And I can tell the difference between a zero and a six because their teacher before taught them that. All right, let's look at what's on top there. This is just an example of counting by fives or counting by tens. Now, looking at the numbers and looking at the spaces on that top line, beginning with 50, are we counting by fives or by tens? Thank you. Fives. 50, 55, 60, 65, 70, 75. On the next line, are we counting by fives or by tens? By tens. And then generally, I would have a student who's filling in the numbers as we do that project. When we're studying 12 inches equals a foot, 3 feet equals a yard, I like to have a visual. My son can tell you which it is. My daughter is scratching her head and she's not sure if she's 6 feet tall or 6 yards tall. So ask them things like your hammer and let them picture that and understand that a hammer is a foot long, not a yard long. Grandpa's cane, your math book, the window, just choose things and ask them to tell you which one is 1 foot and which one is 1 yard. I think we have time to talk a little bit about borrowing. I obviously can't tell you all about borrowing in the next 3 minutes, but just a few simple things. Again, here's one of those where you need to have steps and procedures. If they can just go through it step by step, these problems aren't complicated at all. The first thing I'm doing, where do I look first? Your students should know in the ones place. I look in the ones place. The next question I ask myself, which number is larger? The top number. If so, I can just subtract. 7 minus 3 is 4. 5 minus 4 is 1. And I'm finished. Look at this one. Which place do I start? I start in the ones place. Which number is larger? The bottom number is larger. So now, I must borrow 1. So what's 1 less than 9? It's 8. I put that one that I borrowed over here. Now I know what 13 minus 4 is. And I can put 9 here. I know what 8 minus 7 is. I can put my 1 right there. Again, it was in this context that my son said, "Oh, we did tons of that." But now that he's done tons of it, he's confident. And he enjoys math. Thank you for your help today.